Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the fluoride deception right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It tells us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of those many lessons in our business school conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the fluoride deception, reviewing the book by Christopher Bryson, published about 2003 or 4. It reads like a novel. It's the story of fluoride, how it got into our water supply to start with. And it's a thriller. It's a mystery. It's a detective story. And it devolves upon the Manhattan Project. If it hadn't been for the atomic bomb, we wouldn't have fluoride in our water today, and all of our teeth would rot out of our heads, and we'd all have false teeth, I suppose. That's the story we've been told. The truth of the matter is, fluoride is the most toxic substance in the world. I can't think of anything that's more toxic. There might be, plutonium might be, californium, berkelium, some of these man-made nuclear discoveries, you know, after the periodic table ends at number 92, there's a few man-made elements, you know, that came on the scene after and during World War II. And they tell you here in the book that it's more toxic. I mean, it takes less of this stuff to kill you, this fluoride, than it does arsenic and strychnine. It's more toxic than the both of them combined. They just point that out to give you a little, you know, a little balance there so that you can see that this stuff isn't the benign good stuff, you know, like little Sally's, you know, where they call those shoes, you know, that you look at and they're shiny. I forgot now what the hell the name of them is. But you know, when you're talking about something that's benign, that is, it doesn't cause you any harm, we look upon it mentally, and we have a good feeling about it. Fluoride is one of those things. You know, chocolate, a chocolate sundae, you know, or a milkshake, you know, you have a good feeling about having a hamburger and a milkshake. You have a good feeling about brushing your teeth with fluoride. You would not have the same good feeling about brushing your teeth with arsenic, strychnine, or with lye. Those are words that give you a bad feeling. Those are words that say this is a deadly toxic poison. Now, there was a modality for getting you to believe that. It's not true, but you believe it, and we accept it because of propaganda. Today, they call it spin coming out of the White House. Well, spin is a lie. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. They're lying to you, but they don't want to say, well, look, we're lying to you. So they say, well, that's their spin on it. That's our spin on it. And they're called spin doctors. Well, the guy Harold Hodge here, he was the chief spin doctor for fluoride. Now, this guy Hodge is like Dr. Frankenstein. I mean, he appears to be a pretty nice guy. And I'm sure he had a nice wife and kids and probably had a dog and a house in the suburbs, and more than likely had the lawn to mow every Saturday. But the moral of the story is this guy was doing human experiments. This guy was doing neurological tests clear back during the war, 1943, 44, 45. And he kept it secret. In fact, he kept it so secret, he took it to the grave with him. He never divulged national security secrets. And this was a national security secret. But the secret got out in 1944 when the DuPont plant in Delaware was killing livestock and destroying the peach crop and wrecking the farmers' livelihood. So the farmers sued. And to keep it under wraps, the government used its tried and tested formula of shut up and then deny everything. Ultimately, by stonewalling it, the government settled with the farmers out of court so that no court precedent could ever be set against fluoride. And that's what they did there. The government's modality is to string it out and to cost you as much money as possible. Because, see, the government has an endless supply of money. They just tax it from you. And if they don't tax it from you, they just print it up and spend it. All right, so the government has unlimited funds to fight you with in the courts. You have limited funds with which to fight the government in the court. So strategy number one, run you out of money. Make this so expensive that it isn't worth it. Then they come by out of court and say, look, if you'll settle out of court, we'll pay you X number of dollars. Again, doesn't cost the government anything. They just tax it from you, or they go out and print it and spend it. So the government has unlimited funds with which to pay these damages. But the important thing is that we don't pay these damages up front with an admission, gee, we're sorry as hell, we wrecked your peach crop, killed your livestock, and probably ruined your kids' health. Now that is something that they will never admit to. And when you sign the agreement, the government says, we do not admit any wrongdoing. We're just doing this in the interest of justice to solve a problem. They did that at St. George, Utah, with all of the victims there from the atomic bomb tests. They did it here with the farmers with the fluoride poisoning. They do it constantly. It's the modus operandi. It's the way the deal comes down. You're going to ultimately settle out of court. The government will never admit any wrongdoing. That prevents any court precedent that you could go back to. Now, there's been a couple of exceptions. For instance, tobacco finally was broken. And then asbestos was finally broken. And if you'll remember, there was a silicon implant that was put out by Dow Corning, I believe it was. That one was broken. And it may well be that someday the back of this fluoride conspiracy will be broken, but I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet on it. There have been some exceptions to the rule, but the general rule is that when the government and industry team up together to accomplish a goal or a project. They do it. They do it successfully. The history tells us that it's always been a successful enterprise. And the Lusitania, the sinking of the Lusitania, you know, it came to light long after all of the people from World War I were dead, that ship was in fact carrying munitions for Britain in violation of the Neutrality Act. But, you know, so what? It's true now we found out that President Roosevelt knew about the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, but, you know, all those people are dead now, so what? 50 years from now, you'll find out that, well, yeah, Rumsfeld and Bush knew about the torture going on in Iraq and at Guantanamo, but, you know, so what? The moral of the story is, today they deny it. Today, they stonewall it. Now, you know it's true, because you get a few reports coming out. But those reports are squelched. And then the people that make those reports, the whistleblowers, are shunted aside. Their careers end. And that's what happened to this Phyllis Mullinex. See, she discovered the toxic reaction, the neurological toxic reaction, which this guy Hodge had already discovered clear back in World War II by actually using it on human subjects. And he wasn't just experimenting with fluoride. They experimented on human subjects in hospitals, and they kept track of them. So, and they put fluoride in the water supply. I think it was Rochester, New York. I said Utica the other day, but I think it was Rochester. I forget which chapter I read that in, but they took one city in New York and they put water. They put the fluoride in the water. This is back in World War II, to see what the hell this would do to a whole population of people. It was an experiment. Now, they've been doing that from day one. It's that they constantly deny it, and when you and I believe it, it's kind of like torture, you know. When I heard about that Abu Ghraib thing over there, I was really disappointed, because I've been taught all my life that Americans don't torture prisoners. That's something that the Germans and Russians and all the bad guys, the Chinese, do, but we don't do that because, see, we take the high moral ground. That's a lie. We torture them just like anybody else, and maybe more so. I don't know. But we're hypocrites about it. See, when the Russians do it, they just take you, beat you up, and torture you, get what they want out of you, and then kill you. And then we say, well, geez, what animals they are. We Americans are hypocrites about it. We do the same thing, but we do it a little bit different. We have a thing called rendition over here. See, remember what rendition is? That's where you catch this guy over in Afghanistan. Now, you want to torture him. But, see, Americans don't do that. So you turn him over to the Egyptians, and you pay the Egyptians to torture this guy and get the information, or the Syrians or Jordanians or somebody else. That's the way you do that. I prefer the Russian model. Now, they're up front about it. They're animals. They just come right up front and they say, yeah, that's right, we're animals, and that's the way it goes. And so sit down and shut up. All right, well, now, that's what makes this story so gripping. I mean, if I've ever read a novel... I've read a few, and I try to stay away from novels because they don't add anything to my fund of knowledge or my fund of understanding. But this one, this is a gripping story. And this guy, Christopher Bryson, he did a hell of a job writing it. And he starts off with the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. He's got the footnotes, and he's got the documentation to back it up. And these are the admissions that come from the Manhattan Project, written in their own handwriting. I mean, these guys, they wrote it all down. And then they classified it top secret. See, that's what the Bush administration does now. See, anything they don't want you to know about, they just classify it as secret and store it away for 50 years. That's the way that game is played. You can't even get that on discovery. I mean, if you go into court, you can't get that. Now, that's top secret. That's national security. So that's the way they keep the information away from us. All right, now listen. Here's Chapter 7, The Subterranean Channel of Secret Keeping. Now, after the war, Harold Hodge became the leading figure promoting water fluoridation in the United States around the world. While the University of Rochester served as a kind of queen bee for the Cold War era dentistry, hatching a generation of dental school researchers who were unanimous in support of a central role for fluoride in their profession. Now, if you look at the credentials of the people who have been important in academic dentistry, you'll find that Hodge's interests here at Rochester were responsible for many of those people getting their expertise. Or so noted the toxicologist Paul Morrow, who worked alongside Hodge for about 20 years. The fluoridation of public water supplies was the crowning glory of Harold Hodge's career. He pioneered fluoridation very adamantly, Morrow pointed out. That was one of the most difficult things he did. There was an extraordinary resistance to the use of rat poison in the public water supplies. Well, I forgot to tell you that. The rat poison, that's what they used to make rat poison out of, was fluoride. And so, the concept of using this rat poison in the public water supply, now that takes a lot of propaganda. But I'm telling you right now, listen to this, let me tell you. If the government and industry set out in the morning to put arsenic in your water supply, in 30 years, you people would accept arsenic in your water supply, and you would see arsenic as benign as a Hershey chocolate bar, just like you'd do fluoride today. Now, chlorine is a deadly poison, and it causes arterial sclerosis. Fluoride is a deadly poison, and it causes a whole host and plethora of disease symptoms, just like aspartame causes 92 symptoms, and it kills about 6,000 people a year. That's our estimate. We don't know how many people fluoride kills because there's no death certificate that ever says died from fluoride poisoning. They put it in small amounts. You accumulate the poison over a lifetime. Then the poison debilitates your immune system and some opportunistic disease comes in like Lou Gehrig's disease or something else. But we can never say to a guy that's got Lou Gehrig's disease, well, it was the fluoride that weakened your immune system and the Lou Gehrig's disease is the opportunistic disease that's going to kill you. That's what we're going to put on your death certificate. That's why this fluoride is the perfect crime. A perfect murder. You can't beat it. Today, however, revelations that Hodge concealed wartime information about fluoride central nervous system effects in atomic workers, secretly studied the health of the subjects of the water fluoridation experiment at Newburgh, New York. Okay, excuse me, I said Rochester, I said Utica. Here it is, it's in Chapter 7, it's Newburgh, New York. This is where it started. That's the city that they tried the experiment in. And they did it on behalf of the Manhattan Project, and they gave information on fluoride safety to the U.S. Congress that later proved to be inaccurate. See Chapter 11. All called into question Hodge's agenda as the grand architect of America's great post-war fluoride experiment. I want you to notice here, too, boys and girls, that these witnesses, they come up before Congress and these congressional committees, and they just lie through their teeth. So, you and I, we listen to the congressional committees, and we see it on C-SPAN, and we say, oh, gosh, good. Congress is investigating. Yeah, that's all they do. They investigate. They never come to a conclusion. They never solve a problem. Have you ever heard of a congressional committee listening to testimony that came out later and then solved the problem? Name one. Send me an email. Tell me when that ever happened. Because I can't think of a single one. I can't recite a single instance in which any congressional committee ever solved the problem. They investigate it. They put it on the front burner. They talk about it. And then it leaves us with the impression, well, Congress is going to fix that. They're going to go to the Food and Drug Administration and make them stop doing that or make them start doing something else. They don't do any of the above. They just go there and they talk a lot, jawbone a lot. When they get all through, you and I never hear about it again. We assume that it's taken care of. We assume that our food is safe. We assume that fluoride is safe. We assume that chlorine is good for us. And that they've done all these tests and they've made all these adjustments and everything is just running along honky-dory. Now, I've mentioned this before. Let me mention it again. In World War II, 60% of Americans were healthy, 40% had symptoms. Today, 99% of Americans have symptoms, only 1% of us are symptom-free. We're a lot sicker today than we were in 1960. 17. Now, 40% of us having symptoms in 1917 wasn't good. If you'll take a look at Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, first 14 verses, God said, I'll bless you in everything you do. Health is one of those blessings. You should have perfect health. You shouldn't have cavities in your teeth. You don't need fluoride to prevent cavities in your teeth. You need nutrients. Cavities in your teeth is a symptom. When your teeth are rotten out of your head, you've got nutritional deficiencies. That's what your problem is. You're being starved to death. You need to fix the starvation problem. And you don't have a fluoride deficiency. Fluoride is not an essential nutrient, although we've been told that it is. Now, even during his lifetime, researchers had begun to examine Hodges' career more closely. In 1979, a journalist, John Marks, reported that Hodge had helped the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, that's the CIA, in its search for a mind control drug. In his book, The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, Marks described how the CIA had given the hallucinogenic drug LSD to unsuspecting Americans. He wrote that Hodge and his Rochester research team had been the pathfinders in that research program, figuring out a way to radioactively tag LSD. So I knew he had something to do with the CIA, but that is all, recalls the scientist and historian J. Newell Stannard, who worked alongside Hodge at Rochester in 1947. Marx may have only scratched the surface of Dr. Hodge's work for the CIA. The journalist filed Freedom of Information Act requests and received scores of heavily redacted files. Although the names of the people and institutions have mostly been blacked out, Marx identified several of the files as referring to CIA contract work at the University of Rochester. The letters, reports, and accounting statements make chilling reading. They are the bureaucratic account of a laboratory and its scientists eagerly hunting for chemicals to selectively affect the central nervous system and to produce symptoms even more bizarre than LSD. The CIA studied fluoride as a potential mind-controlling substance, and a March 16, 1966 memo from the TSD, most likely the Technical Services Division, titled Behavioral Control Materials and Advanced Research Reports on the Disabling Effects of Dinitrofluoride Derivatives of Acetic Acid that are currently undergoing clinical tests. For many, Harold Hodge's image of respectability collapsed completely in the late 1990s. The reporter, Eileen Welsom, found a once-classified memo that implicated Hodge in perhaps the most diabolical human experiments ever conducted in the United States. On September the 5th, 1945, Hodge attended a University of Rochester planning meeting with several other scientists. Their purpose was to discuss the research protocol for injecting plutonium into unsuspecting and uninformed patients at the University of Rochester's Strong Memorial Hospital. A second AEC document reporting on the experiments thanks Harold Hodge, who participated in the early planning of the work and frequently made general and specific suggestions, which contributed much to the success of the program. In the 1990s, the federal government settled a lawsuit with a family member, or the family members of those plutonium experiment victims, paying approximately $400,000 each family. Now, you never heard that because, see, that's classified as top secret. So here's what's going on here. You go to the hospital because maybe you've got a gallbladder problem. And so here you are in the hospital and you're being operated on, and routinely, you know, the nurse comes in, she gives you a shot of this, gives you a shot of that. You don't know what's in that shot. You believe and you trust that nurse. You believe and you trust the doctor that these people are working in your best interest. And like as not, they are. You know, I'm not suggesting that every time that the nurse comes into your room and gives you an injection that she's shooting you up with plutonium. But you wouldn't expect to be shot up with uranium or plutonium or with LSD or with fluoride or something else now, would you? I mean, you know, when they tell you, hey, we're going to give you a shot of penicillin, you presume that, well, this is penicillin, that this isn't some kind of a bizarre government experiment in mind control. This isn't some kind of a bizarre government experiment here along with multinational corporations who are using me as a guinea pig to see what's going to happen to me so that they can protect themselves from lawsuits. Now, do you? But that's exactly what's going on here. And it's done under the guise of national security. Can you imagine what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, under the guise of national security, under the guise of the Patriot Act, under the guise of Homeland Security? Hell, they were doing this 70 years ago, for crying out loud. Well, there's the story. Now, they paid these people $400,000 each. Now, that's a bundle of money. But they never went to trial. None of this was ever made a part of the record. None of it was ever set down in the Supreme Court reports so that we could look back on this and we could say, well, we'll go back to, let's try Roe versus Wade, for instance, or let's go back to Miranda versus Arizona. Let's look for some case law precedent over here to see how this ought to be handled. See, it doesn't make any difference how much money is the final settlement. The people involved all died. Well, you know, or they were severely injured, you know, for life. And it's all done in the name of national security. Now, really, the bottom line to this is its power, its world power, and its profits, like Teflon. You know, what we want to do is we want to experiment with this stuff at taxpayer expense, develop the product, and then take it out in the marketplace and sell it back to these same taxpayers that paid us to research and develop it. Isn't that just real special? Hodge oversaw additional injections in Rochester Hospital patients during the late 40s to find out how much uranium would produce injury. In the fall and winter of that year, 7 people would be injected with uranium in the metabolic unit at Rochester's Strong Memorial Hospital. A tunnel connecting the Army annex to the hospital permitted the uranium and plutonium to be transported to the ward in secrecy. On October 1, 1946, a young white unmarried female aged 24 was injected with 584 micrograms of uranium. She was essentially normal except for chronic undernutrition, which probably resulted from emotional maladjustments, the report stated. In early 1947, a 61-year-old white male alcoholic was admitted to the hospital with a suspected gastric lesion. Although the patient did not appear ill, the scientist noted, as he had no home, he willingly agreed to enter the metabolic unit. And like the other patients, the man did not know he was the subject of an experiment. But it's all right. He was just a crummy alky, anyway, just a dumb alcoholic. Nor was there any attempt to argue that the uranium would have any therapeutic effect on his condition. Injections were explicitly given to find the dose of uranium which will produce minimal injury to the human kidney. The Rochester scientists believed that the human subject would tolerate 70 micrograms of uranium per kilogram of body weight. Accordingly, on January 10th, the same cooperative, short gray-haired man was injected with 71 micrograms of uranium per kilogram. In the 1950s, Dr. Hodge was a key figure in the Boston Project. In this series of experiments, Hodge arranged for Dr. William Sweet of the Massachusetts General Hospital to inject the highest possible dose of various uranium compounds into patients hospitalized with brain cancer. It's okay, hell, they were going to die anyway. The researchers wanted to learn the quantity of uranium to which atomic workers could safely be exposed. In 1995, a former senior government physicist, Carl Z. Morgan, described Hodge during these Cold War years as a particular enthusiast of human experiments. Morgan had visited Hodge's laboratory and years later told government investigators that Dr. Hodge had been one of the Rochester scientists itching, you might say, to get closer to Homo sapiens. Human experiments being done. Now, these are the human experiments that we know about. Human experiments that are documented. Human experiments that we've got records of and we can put in the footnotes. We don't have a clue as to how many total human experiments they did. These are only the ones that we know about. Did they do 10 and that's it? Or did they do these 10, and we found out about these 10, but there are hundreds and thousands of others that are either still classified under some other heading or some other documentation, or the files have been destroyed and done away with, such as the other day, a little story came out on torture. And they were talking about this Chinese waterboarding. It's called the Chinese water torture. And does the United States do that to its prisoners? Well, the CIA took some videotape of it. So they actually had the videotapes. And then they destroy them. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. Just like Richard Nixon destroying those 18 minutes of smoking gun tapes. I mean, come on, kids. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. Anybody in his right mind, first of all, would not make those tapes to start with. But if you made the tapes for the express purpose of using them for instruction for other CIA agents and so on, well, then the only logical thing to do would be to destroy them. And so now there's this big congressional investigation, see, and they're hooping and hollering. And, you know, some whistleblower blew the whistle on this. You can rest assured that his job at CBS or NBC has been terminated. Now, the Congress comes in. The Congress is the ultimate whitewash. Because when the thing gets out of the bag, then it gets published. It gets into the underground press. And you know, millions of people now are exposed to the fact that the United States is torturing prisoners at Guantanamo Bay and or sending them over by rendition to other countries to have them tortured to extract information from them. I mean, the cat's out of the bag. So what we have to do is put the ultimate whitewash on it. So what we do is we create congressional committee hearings. And they bring in witnesses and they testify. Okay, and we get it all out on the table, and then nothing's ever done about it. You know, the committee closes up its hearings and they make their recommendations and reports and they send off their recommendations. Don't have any power to enforce that. You can rest assured that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are not going to do anything to better the conditions of the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. Nothing. They're probably briefed regularly by Bush and the gang in the White House as to what's going on. And Harry Reid and Nancy, they do their part, just like the Republican side, they do their part. And they get out there and they decry it, and they, like John McCain, well, we shouldn't be doing that. In other words, he tells us what we all want to hear. And then we presume that Congress is going to take over and solve that problem. They don't, never have, don't now, aren't going to, and never will. Now that's the way that game's played. Hey, we're at the halfway point. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We are open to individuals, but by prearrangement or invitation only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log scheduled and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Christopher Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception. Tells you where the bodies are buried in the fluoride story. But it goes a little further than that, and it reveals what all of us know anyway. And that is that torture is commonplace in America and has been for generations. That human guinea pig experiments are common fare in the United States of America and have been for many generations. And it's in some cases it's shocking and it's revelatory. It was to me. This Abu Ghraib thing and this rendition thing has turned me against Republicans in general. In fact, I've said this a time or two. You know, I was a conservative, libertarian, and I voted the straight Republican ticket. I could tell you right now, I wouldn't vote for a Republican if you paid me $1,000 a head. And that's what happened with the Depression era. You know, it just turned people off so badly with the Republicans in office through the 1920s that they voted in a communist named Roosevelt, who did more damage than the Republicans did in the 1920s. And I suspect that that's what's coming next. So let's just pay attention now and see if this works out. George Bush and the Republicans have put such a sour taste in the minds of Americans over the past 8 years that they're going to vote in mass like they did for Roosevelt back in 1932. And they will elect a communist like Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, who, along with a Democratic Congress, will have carte blanche to enact gun control legislation and continue wars like the war in Iran. You know, the story that I heard about Hillary Clinton the other day, I'll share this one with you. It's in Acres, USA. And they interviewed this guy who's working for the Kucinich gang. You know, the Kucinich is a radical communist, you know, from Ohio. Anyway, the moral of the story is that his evaluation of Hillary Clinton is that she's a Wall Street Republican in Democratic garb, a closet communist who is carrying out the New World Order agenda. Now, I couldn't have worded it any better myself, but I just thought I'd share that one with you. Came out of Acres, USA, in an interview they did there with the guy that's the advisor, the economic advisor to Dennis Kucinich. All right, getting back here to the story. Human experimentation is being carried out here by Harold Hodge. This guy Hodge over here now is quite a guy. He's the guy that is credited with getting the fluoride into your drinking water. Well, that was quite a story. That's quite an accomplishment of him by itself. To turn a deadly poison into a food additive and put it into the water supply of half the people in America, I mean, that's something to really crow about. And he did it. Now, Hodge would be talking to leaders all over the country. Then Herb Stockinger, the former head of occupational medicine at the Public Health Service, people that chaired public health committees for the government, would be asking for comments or recommendations on appointments on senior committees, things like that. Or so said Judith McGregor. He was just incredible at getting things done, she added. He was a great persuader, noted J. Newell Stannard, who worked with Hodge in the 1940s at the University of Rochester. He had people that would be grateful to do most anything if Harold asked them to do it. Now, these are from two former Rochester students. Judith and James McGregor were able to get a close look at the unique influence that Hodge exerted over the U.S. medical establishment. The pair had followed Hodge to San Francisco in 1969, when the 65-year-old became professor emeritus at the University of San Francisco Medical School. His office door was frequently open, and they listened in awe as the old man clutched the telephone, reaching across the country, making decisions on faculty appointments at medical schools, on the composition of scientific boards and panels, and on the various national committees that set standards for chemical exposure in the workplace. Now, while Hodge wielded the cold steel of political power in the medical world, he generally did so by staying behind the scenes. According to colleagues, his influence was subtle and it was covert. He was supremely adept at getting difficult decisions made in the way that he thought they should be without ever raising his voice or appearing to be confrontational. Now, that was a comment made by James McGregor, who is now a senior official at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Hodge was perhaps the world's master at that, he added. Hodge could have the fewest ripples, or leave the fewest ripples on the water, said Judith McGregor. More than a decade after his death, she can still feel the old man's fingers slipping around her shoulder and neck, her resolve buckling. She called this Hodge's trapezius squeeze, his signature greeting, which involved taking hold of the shoulder muscle called the trapezius and slowly tightening his fingers, all the while looking into your eyes. McGregor called Hodge Grandpapa behind his back, but she was powerless at the old man's touch. He would kind of squeeze your muscle a little, she remembered. It was like a handshake. You knew that when he gave you that trapezius squeeze, he was going to ask for something. And you knew that you were going to do it. You couldn't refuse the guy. Dr. Harold Hodge, it now seems, performed a trapezius squeeze on all of us. It was a great song and dance routine. Probing Hodge's secret fluoride work at the University of Rochester is difficult. Hodge died in 1990. His archive remains closed, and even the multi-million dollar resources of a U.S. presidential committee in the 1990s could not breach Rochester's Cold War defenses, according to the attorney Dan Gutman, a top investigator in that effort. So that's what I just told you a while ago. So even Congress cannot get through this top secret classification. Now, this will be declassified in 50 years. Now, the guy died in 1990, so about the year 2040, long after you and I and most of us are dead and buried, and that'll be made public. And then you'll say, oh my God, look what they did. But you see, by then, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. And you're not going to reverse that out. Now, my point in making this report is to give you a leg up so that you can do something constructive for yourself. I mean, if you think you're going to take fluoride out of the city water supply in Philadelphia or Los Angeles or Miami, I mean, you got your head up the wrong end again. Forget that. the best thing you can do is to get the fluoride out of your own diet so that you don't kill yourself. I mean, there's always survivors. There's survivors and there's victims. And the plot, or the play, or the plan is already in motion. What's been done has been done. Half the water supply in the country is fluoridated. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is half the water supply isn't. That's the good news. Half of it isn't. So why don't you check and find out, is your water supply fluoridated? If it is, stop bathing in it and stop drinking it. Now, I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of what this fluoride does to you, how it affects your mind. It's a neurotoxin. It affects your brain. And it may be that your brain is so affected that it'll never recover. I don't know. I can't tell you that. But it's a deadly poison. It's a neurotoxin. Kills thousands. You never die from fluoride poisoning. You always die from Lou Gehrig's disease or some one of the 450 diseases or symptoms that are in the physician's desk reference. So when you die, your death certificate is gonna have a cause on there. It's going to say you died from cancer. Well, what caused the cancer? Cancer is not normal. Go back to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 14. God told you you'd have no diseases. You follow this law. You follow the law of God. You follow the Ten Commandments. You will have no disease in your lifetime and not a single cavity. The reason that you've got cavities, the reason that you have symptoms is because you're not following that law. Now, somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, what in the hell has adultery got to do with disease? AIDS, herpes, and VD, sonny. AIDS, herpes, and VD. Probably doesn't have anything to do with neurologic disease, but it has a lot to do with venereal disease. By the way, 25% of America's teenagers have a sexually transmitted disease. 25%, that's one out of four. Every fourth girl you kiss, fellas, has a sexually transmitted disease. Isn't that just real special? Let's go out and kiss about 20 of them, and I'll give you one, too. Now, Gutman was a quick sense of humor, has a quick sense of humor and a sharp mind. And he needed both in 1994 for his new job as executive director of President Bill Clinton's Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments. It was called ACHRE, also known as the Clinton Radiation Commission. The attorney had gone to law school with Hillary Clinton. He was tapped by the president to investigate the hundreds of radiation experiments that scientists had performed on unsuspecting U.S. citizens during the Cold War, including some on pregnant women, retarded children, and prisoners. Isn't that just special? On pregnant women. Well, it's in the interest of science. It's in the interest of national security that we're doing this on pregnant women. Well, what about the fetus? What about the retarded child that's born, you know, or the child that's born with some kind of birth defect caused by this uranium? Well, hell, it all goes into the pot, you know. It all goes into scientific understanding. And like as not, it was done on blacks anyway, or some other minority. So what are you getting all excited about? I mean, come on. Now, perhaps the most notorious experiments were the experiments described above with plutonium and uranium that Hodge had helped to plan at the University of Rochester. Now, can you imagine this? I mean, just picture yourself. And you're sitting here in a room with other people, and you say, well, look, we don't know how uranium and plutonium reacts or acts on people. I mean, you know, we can shoot it into rats all day long, but, you know, we don't actually know what it's going to do to Homo sapiens. This is the ultimate test. And we need to do this. Now, how many people are going to say, well, yeah, I'd like to line up for one of those shots of plutonium. Put me down for two. You know, nobody in his right mind is going to sit there and say, well, yeah, shoot me up with uranium. Yeah, stick in a little plutonium, and maybe a little deuterium, and maybe a little fluoride and something. So you have to do this on people that are unsuspecting. And you got to do it on pregnant women. I mean, we got to find out, well, does it cause birth defects? So when we started off here in chapter 1, you know, we got a lady by the name of Phyllis Mullerex, I believe her name was. And she's doing these experiments with fluoride. And Dr. Harold Hodge now is alive, working in the same clinic, and he's monitoring her experiments. He never once says to this lady, "Hell, lady, we've already done this with humans." He took that to the grave, and his archives, his files, are still sealed to this day. Not even Clinton could get into those files after he was dead. How's that for top secrecy? Now, here's a little something that I didn't know about secrecy. I had a scientist here one time at school, and it was quite a story here, so I'll just describe it for you. This guy is not a nuclear scientist. He's a laser physicist, and he's working at Alamogordo, New Mexico, under contract from the Lawrence Radiation Laboratory. So he actually works as his employer is actually the University of California at Berkeley. And then they lease him out to Livermore, who then in turn leases him out to Alamogordo. So, and while he was here at school, he had a bodyguard. And I asked him, I said, "Now, what is this all about?" And he says, "Well, I'm in a very, very highly secretive, specialized field. See, I'm a laser physicist. And I have a security clearance. And the reason I'm here at school is because I've got this problem, and I need to solve this problem so I don't lose my security clearance." He had a financial problem, is what it was. And he needed to solve this financial problem because he can't go bankrupt, because if he goes bankrupt, he loses his security clearance, which in turn he loses his meal ticket. And there's only 30 of these guys in the world. I said, "Oh my God, you mean I'm talking to one of 30 guys in the world that is a laser physicist?" "That's right." And so he had a bodyguard with him, and this bodyguard came to class with him. I mean, this guy never leaves this guy. You know, he's always got this bodyguard, so the Russians don't steal him or kidnapping or something like that. And then in addition to that, he has to call in, get this, he has to call in at least 4 times a day. That's every 6 hours he has to call in to somebody somewhere. He never did tell me but who or where. And he had a satellite telephone. This is a long time back. I mean, we're talking about 15, 20 years ago. Now, I was pretty impressed with that. And he said, so I asked him about security clearances, and he said, we talked about Hangar 51 and, you know, a few things like that. And he'd say, "Well, I can't talk about that. Or I can't talk about that. Those are things that are classified, and we don't talk about that." And then he'd say, "Well, that's not classified." And so then he'd tell me about that, see. "You know, that's part of public domain. Yeah, you know, I can tell you about that." So he told me a lot. Here's the kicker. Did you know the President of the United States cannot get into Hangar 51? I didn't know that. I thought the President of the United States, you know, had the highest security clearance you could get, and he could get in anywhere. I mean, if he wanted a couple of atomic bombs, I guess he'd just call up and say, "Deliver a couple of them over here to the Rose Garden. I'd like to tinker around with one this afternoon," and he'd get one. No, sirree, Bob. The President of the United States, he can't even get into certain areas. He said, and the reason for that is security. He says, "You never know when a communist is going to be elected President of the United States." So the system is set up so that even if you elect a communist representative, I mean, you could elect Hillary Clinton, the world's number one communist, or at least America's number one communist, and it doesn't hurt national security at all, because she can't get in there, she can't find out what those secrets are. Now, she can do a lot of damage. I'm not saying that, you know, the president can't cause a lot of damage, but I'm just pointing out that the President of the United States, congressmen and senators, you know, they do not have carte blanche at the secrets of America. All right, now here's the kicker. Once this thing is declared to be a secret, it's locked up, and you can't get at it. So what's going on here is that they're simply declaring things that ought not to be secrets at all. That ought to just be public policy. No, they don't want that out, so they declare it to be a national secret, and then they can lock it up for 50 years. And fluoride is one of those secrets. You can't unlock it. We don't know the whole story about fluoride. This is just the tip of the iceberg. But boy, that's a very, very revealing tip of the iceberg, let me tell you. Now, the guy's name again is Christopher Bryson, and it's called The Fluoride Deception. It's not a book on fluoride. Now, if you want to know about fluoride and what it does to you, just punch in fluoride into a Google search engine or some other search engine, and you'll have a stack of paper over here done by all kinds of medical doctors and experiments and all, laboratory rats and all. It'll tell you what it does to you and how it does it to you and why and the whole nine yards. This story tells you here's how they got this stuff into your water supply. It's genius. This guy Hodge is probably a demon-possessed, satanic genius. There's just no other way to describe it. How do you sell deadly poison to people in their water, for crying out loud? You know, picture this. I walk up, knock on your door, and I say, listen, my name is George Gordon. And I have here in my little black satchel some deadly poison that I would like to put into the food in your refrigerator. Would you please let me in? I mean, obviously, you'd say, well, you got to be out of your cotton picking mind. Well, that's precisely what this guy Hodge has done. He has sold it to the whole dental profession. And here's the kicker. There isn't a dentist in the country that doesn't know this story. He might not know where it came from. He might not know what I'm telling you now. But there isn't a dentist in this country that doesn't know the toxic effect of fluoride. They're all informed. And they're giving it to you anyway. Now, an honest dentist would tell you the truth. There's probably a lot of honest ones out there because I've read a lot of stories. A lot of anti-fluoride material comes from the dentists themselves. So they're not all criminals and crooks. But I'm just telling you, there's no one of them doesn't know this. And those that are selling it to you, they all know this also. And everybody at the Food and Drug Administration knows this. Everybody at the FDA. Everybody at the Department of Agriculture. Everybody at the CDC. Everybody. There isn't any exceptions. These people go to college. These people are educated. These people know the pros and cons. The only people that don't know what the hell's going on with fluoride are the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, the truck drivers out here, guys like you and me. We're the only ones that are deceived. The professionals all know this. Well, no, that tells you part of the story. See, this guy Hodge over here, he knows this. This guy is actually shooting people up for the express purpose of monitoring their reactions to these deadly toxins, for crying out loud. This is human experimentation. This is the ultimate. And his rationale, more likely, is, oh my God, this is national security. We got to do this to save the nation, to save the people. And, you know, hell, maybe a few hundred Americans dead in the name of scientific research to further science to make America safe for democracy. Maybe it's a small price to pay. I don't know. You be the judge. You decide for yourself. I'm just a reporter. I give you the information. You can do with that information what you please. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's about up. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.